Parshas, Parshat Shemot, begins the entire Sefer Shemot, the book of really the Galut and Geula, the exile and the redemption. The Parsha, in summary, is the sojourn of the Jewish people within Egypt, the beginning of the persecution against the Jews, the building of Pitom and Ramses, the taxes that the Jews had to do to build up these cities. We also have in the Parsha the different decrees that Pharaoh had against the Jews, starting with the midwives, of killing all the male children, keeping the female ones alive. And then ultimately, when the midwives did not listen to Pharaoh, they feared God, there was a decree for the entire people to throw the male children into the Nile. As this is going on, we're told of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was hid for 3 months and then ultimately placed in a basket within the Nile. How Bat Pharaoh comes and saves the child. Moshe Rabbeinu grows up in Pharaoh's household, goes out and sees the affliction of his people, and 3 incidences of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, which ultimately lead him, the 3rd incident, to Midian. Moshe, as a shepherd in Midian, sees this great revelation known as the burning bush, the Sne Boer Ba'esh, and the directive by God to have Moshe Rabbeinu come and save and redeem the people. Moshe's initial reluctance, the joining of Aaron together, coming to Paro, making this request, and instead of things getting easier, things get much harder. Straw is now not given to the people, and the taskmasters are very upset with Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu complains to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the parasha ends with Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, "Don't worry, you will yet see what I will do to Paro." I think the overall question in looking at this parasha is we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was described by the Torah itself as one who lokam navi kemoshe ot. There's never been a prophet, there's never been an individual as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. And this week's parasha is really the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. This is Vayigdal, this is the time where he grew up. So the question I think we need to ask ourselves is, what can we learn from this parasha? What are the aspects we can study within the parasha that will give us some clue on how to become great? Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest person who ever lived, what were some of the items that happened in his life? What were some of the ingredients, the components that made him so great that we perhaps can emulate and model for our own lives, that we too, Zakatan Gadol, yeah, we too can become great? So I think that is our overall megamar, overall goal in looking at this parsha, really the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. The second question is a much more specific question, but also relating very much to Moshe Rabbeinu and his birth. We know in the story of how the daughter of Paro went down, the Torah tells us, to bathe in the Nile, and she saw this box, this little ark in the rushes, and she sent her hand, Amata, or her maiden, she sent it to get this little basket. And she opened the basket, and she saw the boy, and the infant began to cry, and she had pity on it. And she said, "It's one of the Hebrew boys." At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu's sister, who's standing by from the side, comes in and says, "I have a perfect person to nurse this child." She calls the mother. Basically, Moshe Rabbeinu was raised by Yocheved the first number of years of his life. And once the child matured, then his mother brought him to Paro's daughter. She adopted him as her own son and named him Moshe. And the reason that she gives, "Vatomer kimina mayim mishitihu," "I bore him from the water." The famous question that's asked, which is noted in the Torah Moshe, the Al Shech HaKadosh in source number 3, it is peculiar that he was not called Mashui, the passive form, Kimin Hamayim Mishitiyu, he was drawn, but Moshe as if it's the active term, as if Moshe himself had done the pulling. So question number 1 is, if indeed Moshe Rabbeinu's name is based on the experience of being pulled out of the water, so his name should have been Mashui, the one who was drawn out. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu's name Moshe, one who draws others out? The second part of the question is, we know the Medrash tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu had many names, Tuvia, Netanel, Yekusiel, Yered, and they all have to do with different aspects of his life. Yered, he brought down the Torah. Why is it that throughout the Torah, the only name that Kadosh Baruch Hu uses, the only name that we're familiar with really, is Moshe Rabbeinu, the name that the daughter of Paro gave to this young boy? What is special about the name Moshe that this is the name that throughout the Torah of Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Lemor, that the name Moshe is used. I think to answer our questions of what made Moshe Rabbeinu so great, what is the significance of his name Moshe and that Mashui, we need to look at a third selection, really our second selection or third point within the parsha. And I think two understandings of this pasuk will form for us the two levels of understanding what made Moshe Rabbeinu great, an understanding of the concept of the significance of Moshe vis-a-vis Mashui. The Torah tells us that when Moshe was shepherding the sheep of Yitro, the beginning of Perek Gimel of chapter 3, so he arrived at the mountain of God and he saw an angel of Hashem appear to him in a blaze of fire from amidst the bush. He saw and behold, the bush was burning in the fire, but the bush was not consumed. So Moshe thought, I will turn aside now and look at this great sight. Why will the bush not be burned? So here's the key pasuk in the fourth verse. Hashem saw that he turned aside to see, and Hashem called out from him from amid the bush and said, Moshe, Moshe, and replied, Hinei me, here I am. It seems from the pasuk that what drew HaKadosh Baruch Hu's attention, the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu called to Moshe, and basically the rest is history, is the key phrase where Hashem saw that he turned aside to see. The question we need to understand is, what is the significance of this phrase, where Hashem saw that he turned aside to see, that this was the reason it seems from the Mikra, from the text, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu called out to Moshe and said, you're the chosen one, you're it. You're the great one whom I have chosen. The turning aside seems to be something very significant, something very great. And we need to understand what indeed this was. So I'd like to try to present two approaches based on our parsha of what indeed made Moshe Rabbeinu great, and to try to understand the significance of his name. So in reality, there are two aspects that we'll find within the parsha of what made Moshe Rabbeinu great. One, that which was invested in him from others, and two, that which he took the initiative himself and developed. And I think this is a tremendous model for us, as we will see, as parents or future parents, what we can do to make our children great, to make our children reach their full potential, to sensitize our children, and at the same time, what will make us great, what will improve us as individuals. I'd like to begin our study with, on the first level, of what was invested in Moshe Rabbeinu, and then see how he was able to take that and really integrate it into his whole life. The first level is based on the writings of the Sichus Musar of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. An idea entitled Tevat Noach, an idea we saw a number of years ago, Parshat Pinchas Shir, a very, very important fundamental idea I'd like to review as well today. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz notes the following thought. He says, Bo ure'e eiz ha-shefa shel koach nichnas b'chomer ayidei ha-mesirut v'ahava shemashkia bo yotzro ha-adam. We need to understand what tremendous power a physical object can have based on the amount of energy of the person who invests in that physical object. Perhaps the famous example that he quotes is the story of how Elisha was going to revive the Shunammite's son, and he turns to his servant Gehazi and says to him, take this mishene, take this walking stick, and put it on the boy, and the boy will become revived. So you read the story and you say to yourself, a mishenet, a walking stick, that's going to revive the child? I can understand how breathing on the child, the kedusha, the holiness of the Navi, can affect the child. But a mishenet, a physical object, a domain, an inanimate walking stick, that's going to revive a child? So says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, this is exactly our point. It just wasn't a mishenet. Elisha invested his whole koach of a Navi, his entire being, of everything who he was, He put into this mishene, he put into this walking stick. And therefore, this walking stick took on, so to speak, the persona of the Navi himself. And had Gehazi not made fun, and had Gehazi really been a proper emissary, so then this mishene would have indeed been able to revive this child. And likewise, we see that Shmuel HaNavi had a me'il, had a little coat from that his mother made him, that grew with him, that the very famous scene of Shmuel HaNavi being revived by the Balat Ov, he's described as coming up with this me'il, with this coat. What was so significant in this coat was the same idea, that Hannah, his mother, put in all her love, all her tefillah, all her tears for this child, and everything she hoped and dreamed for in this child, she put into this coat when she made this little coat for Shmuel. And therefore Shmuel absorbed through osmosis this love, this dedication, this Ahava Yisrael, this Ahava for the Jewish people, this Ahava for God. And that's what made Shmuel HaNavi who he was. And that's why it's so significant that Moshe Rabbeinu is given the name throughout the entire Torah of the daughter of Paro. Why? Because explains Reb Chaim Shulevitz, Mikoach Mesirus Nafshah Shal Bisya Bat Paro, from the amount of Mesirus Nefesh, where the daughter of Paro gave her entire being to save this child. She mritah pi aviha, and in doing so, she rebelled against her father's command. It was this amount of gemilus chesed, this amount of kindness that she gave into Moshe. The action itself of saving this child, of going against her father's decree to take this child out of the Yaor, out of the Nile, and allow it to live. That ability to put one's whole being into saving a child, this mesirus nefesh, this giving of oneself but entirely, that is what she put in, that is what she ingrained into Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is what made Moshe Rabbeinu the Moshe Rabbeinu he was. Ki min ha'mayim mishitihu, she drew him from the water. But it was her drawing from the water, it was the mesirus nefesh that she put in into drawing him from the water, that then allowed Moshe Rabbeinu to become Moshe, one who draws others. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu could stand after the sin of the golden calf and say, Necheni na mesifrecha, erase me from your book that you have written. That mesirus nefesh that he had for the Jewish people came from whom? Came from the daughter of Paro who saved him. That's why this name is a name that is used, because this name embodies the whole essence of Moshe Rabbeinu. The name represents everything, the gemilus chesed that the daughter of Paro put into Moshe Rabbeinu. And the beauty of the name is so significant, since he was drawn, that energy that allowed him to be drawn is the energy, is the force that's going to allow him to draw out others. Rav Nissen Alpert in Limudei Nissan just develops this idea one step further. And he says it wasn't only the Mesirus Nefesh, it wasn't only the ability to give of herself but completely. There was another component, another side of the prism that was invested at this moment. And that is found from a diuk, from a looking at the verse very carefully. The verse says, chapter 2, verse 6, that she opened up the little box and she saw the child, and it was a child crying, and she had mercy on it. And she said, this must be from the Jewish children. So, plaintiveness and output, that the Torah should have been, perhaps, more logically to say, she opened up, she saw the child, and she saw it was a child who was crying, and she said, this is a Jewish child. And now that we've discussed and described that which she saw, so now we have her reaction. Vatachmol alav, she had mercy on it. Why is the mercy placed between the crying child and it's a Jew? So explain to this and output a very important yesod, a very important fundamental principle. When she opened up that little basket and she saw the child, she immediately had pity on it, and in her mind decided she was going to save this child. And then she had to deal with reality. Reality is he is a Jewish child and he shouldn't be saved. But now that she's already made up her mind, now that already batachmol alam she's had mercy on him, so now all she has to do is figure out a way to be able to save this child. And that's why I explained to Rav Nissen Alpert, we always have as a combination the concept of chesed and emet, of kindness and truth. Never emet and then chesed, never truth and then kindness. Because in life, if we look at things from the logical, rational, truth point of view of emet, so chesed will never even come near us. We look at a person and they need money or they need help. So if we look at it from the emet point of view, the emet perspective says, let him go get a job. Let him support himself. Why should I support him? He'll never do chesed. If you're first filled with chesed, I feel bad for him, I want to help him out. So then you'll act, and then MS will have to deal with it. Maybe I can help him get a job, let me help him get on a seat. But you first have to be inspired by chesed, and then MS. What the daughter of Paro is teaching Moshe Rabbeinu is this concept of chesed and MS. It's the concept where you need to be able to have pity on another. You need to be able to feel the pain, v'tachmol, to have that mercy, to have that chemla on another person, and then understand, now that I feel this, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to act on it? And this indeed is the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah tells us that it wasn't only that this is what was invested in him, but we see as Moshe Rabbeinu grows up in the three incidences that we have of his life, we see that he was able to internalize these ideas of Mesiras Nefesh, of giving oneself entirely, and he was able to act on it and to have that sensitivity toward other people. Torah tells us the first incident where the child grew up, it happened in those days that Moshe grew up and went out to his brethren and observed their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian man striking a Hebrew man of his brethren. So the Torah proceeds, Rabbi Laffan Outlooks and Insights notes, to specify the sign of Moshe's spiritual maturity, the fact that he went out to his brothers and saw their labors. Rashi comments on this phrase that Moshe contemplated their plight and applied his eyes and heart to suffer with them. Moshe Rabbeinu here is showing the midah, and this is really level number one of what makes a person great. The midah of nosei ba'ol im chaveiro, to feel the pain of another and to act on that. And that's why the Matnat Chaim, the Mashkiach of the Lakewood Yeshiva, notes based on the writings of Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm, that this is why the Torah tells us only these three stories about Moshe Rabbeinu interacting with other people. Because they all three have the same common denominator, that Moshe Rabbeinu is involved in seeing the pain of others. He's involved in seeing the pain of others until Mesiras Nefesh, until he's ready to give up himself, where he kills the Egyptian. He stands up for two Jews fighting with each other. And where you really see his level of dedication, the level of vatachmo, the mercy, which the daughter of Bat Paro invested in him, is at the moment that he's in a strange land, where he doesn't know anyone. And here these shepherds are giving the daughters of Yitro real difficulty. He steps in and saves the daughters of Yitro, even in a strange country. Because his whole being is sensitive to the pain of others. And not only does he save them, the Torah tells us that he allowed the sheep to drink. He acts with compassion and with sensitivity to others. And that's why Rabbi Leff in Outlooks and Insights notes in 18 that the mark of a gadol, a person who possesses greatness and maturity, is defined by the Torah in terms of his ability to be concerned with others. Not a question of how much a person can learn and how much a person may know by heart. The real question, and we know this about all of our gedolim of our generation, whether it was Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, all these great tzaddikim, zecher levracha, zichronam levracha, they, all of them, story after story, is marked by their smile, by their kindness, by their warmth toward others. And we know, says Rabbi Lev, that the Ribono Shel Olam is called Hagadol, the Great, and our rabbis explain this appellation to refer to God's trait of goodness and kindness. Therein lies his godliness. The concern that envelops and permeates all existence is the mark of His unlimited greatness, hence He is HaGadol. And we who walk in God's ways also have to be concerned with all creation and to strive to emulate that all-encompassing concern. Beautiful idea of Rav Shimon Shkop in Sharei Yosher, where he explains the following paradox. He said, on the one hand, man was created with a natural concern for himself and one's personal needs. Yet on the other hand, we're commanded and exhorted to be concerned with others. So how are we able to balance this? So Shimon Shkop explained the following. He says that everyone possesses their ani, the essence of their being. As the Mishnah states, Im ein ani li mi li, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? However, the definition of the selfhood can be expanded beyond the parameters of one's physical person. Many people feel that their spouse are part and parcel of themselves. His wife is like his own body. Others extend their self to include their families, still others their neighbors. The more one perfects himself, the more his concept of self encompasses. The truly great person feels all the Jewish people, entire world, is indeed part of itself. And that's the end of the Mishnah. Ukeshani la'atzmi ma'ani. When my ani is limited to my individual self alone, what is the value of my ani? It's very interesting. Where I really saw this concept developed of how in life we begin with the ani of the I, and then that I begins to expand to include other people as well beyond oneself. It was a personal story that happened to me 2 years ago. We were visiting in Eretz Yisrael. We took a vacation up north to Rosh HaNikra. I'm sure many people have been there. Take a cable car down. Very beautiful, beautiful area where you see how the waters have broken into the rocks and made beautiful caves. So we went to this one particular area. The sun was setting, and you look through the opening of the rock, and you saw the water and the sun setting on the water. It was an absolutely exquisite sight. So we decided to sit and just contemplate and look at this beautiful sight for a number of moments before moving on. And as we're sitting there, we noticed the following sequence of events. There was a group of Beis Yaakov students, girls, who were on a summer teyul, a summer trip, visiting this place. And as they came to this beautiful point, each of the girls asked their friends to take their cameras and take a picture of themselves in front of this beautiful scene. And it was interesting to note that the girls wanted just themselves in the picture, not even with their friends. They wanted this particular very poignant spot to be shared by themselves alone. And after this group passed by, there came a family with Kanai Nahara, 4 or 5 children. And it was interesting of how the mother lined up the children in age order and took a picture just of the children without her and her spouse. And when this group moved along, then came an elderly couple. So I said to myself, what are they going to take it up? The teenager took it of themselves. The people with the family already moved beyond themselves to their children. So what did this elderly couple take a picture of? So the answer is so beautiful. They took a picture of the scene itself with no one in it. This is what we mean in life, how we move through stages. And as Rabbi Left notes, a baby enters this world with a clenched fist. After 120 years, part of the preparation for burial includes the opening of the deceased's hands. A person comes into this world concerned only with his own needs and desires. His fist is clenched tight. He is closed unto himself. As he matures, he slowly opens that fist to reach out, to extend himself to others, to embrace an entire world in his concern, and he must exit this world with an open hand. This outreach of the self is not merely sympathy, but a deep empathy and total identification. But this alone is not sufficient. One must have assessed his neighbor's situation with his eyes. He must open his heart to what he sees to actually experience emotionally the hurt and the pain. And as Rav Olbin Ali Shur notes, that when we're speaking about Hanosei Ba'ol Im Chaveiro, to really feel the burden of pain with another, it's not just enough to see, it's not just enough to feel empathy, one needs to act upon it. What can I do to alleviate the burdens of others? And that's why the Medrash and our Pasuk, Vayar B'Sivlotam, he saw Moshe Rabbeinu in their difficulties, that he actually picked up some bricks and walked with them. He wanted to share the burden in whatever small way he could. Binosei ba'olim chaveiro means that we need to act. It's not just enough to say, oh, a person's sick, that's too bad. Well, what can I do about it? How can I help this person out? A wonderful story told in Rabbi Krohn's latest book, how a certain rabbi, I think, was driving home this grandmother from a wedding, or met this woman at a wedding, and the grandmother was all distraught. It was her granddaughter's sitter party that morning, and the teacher had asked a number of the children to bring in certain snacks in honor of the party. Whatever the story was, the mother, reading the letter, didn't look at all the symbols that the teacher gave as a guideline, and brought in cookies, or whatever it was, that didn't have the symbol that the teacher wanted. So the teacher would not allow this young lady to pass out her cookies that she brought in. And the kid was distraught. She sat the entire sitter party crying that she wasn't able to bring out, you know, to share her cookie. And this grandmother telling this rabbi the story said, what worries me is that my granddaughter will always have a negative association with a sitter because of this incident that happened. So what did this rabbi do? He went home, found out who this family was, and called up the family and said that he's a representative of Torah Masara, and every year they have a raffle of all the kids who had sitter parties that year, and they raffle off a beautiful leather-bound sitter with a child's name on it. And this year, this young lady won the raffle. Mazel tov, please tell me the child's name so I can engrave in the child's name onto the sitter and send it to you. There's such a beauty in this story. It's not enough to hear how a grandmother is talking about her distraught granddaughter. That is just feeling the pain, the sympathy, the empathy. But to go one step further and say, well, let me try to rectify the situation. Let me try to make this child feel better. And he received such a beautiful thank you note with a little girl holding up the sitter with her name on it to this rabbi. Being able to make a person feel better, to do something, that is the greatness of a person, the greatness of a gadol, the small acts that alleviate a person's difficulties to try to help people out. And I think on level number one, this is the first thing we learn about Moshe Rabbeinu. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was his ability to be sensitive to others, to be nosei ba'olim chaveiro, the common denominator of the stories of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, the fact that Moshe is a roeh, is a shepherd in that beautiful medrash, how with the sheep ran away, Moshe Rabbeinu turned to the sheep and said, oh, if you had only told me you were thirsty, I would have done something about it. You must be so tired from running, and carried the sheep back to the rest of the flock. That's the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think on this level, just to bring it into our own lives, these are the components that we need to, A, as parents, work on with children, and B, as individuals, to begin to sensitize ourselves to in order to become a gadol, a great person. It is so important that part and parcel of the way we raise children is a sensitivity to others. So, for example, there are a number of schools that encourage children, if a classmate is sick, to call up the children and say, hello, how are you? As a parent, we need to encourage the children to go one step further and to call up the child and say, if you know your child is very good in math or in Chumash, whatever subject, and say to the child who is sick, don't worry, I'll take your math notes for you. Now, I'll bring home your math homework and I'll sit and I'll explain to you when you get back. Level number one for sure has to be to call up that sick child. That's to be nosei ba'olim chaveiro, to feel the empathy a child is sick. You want to connect with that sick child. But that's not where it can end. It then has to be, and it's really the responsibility of the parent, to say to the child, what can you do for this sick child? Let's brainstorm together how we can help this child out. Very impressed. I was in the car the other day, and I noticed a mother taking some children in carpool home. And these kids are schlepping around. It almost looks like luggage, you know, on wheels, these big suitcases of their backpacks. And the mother opens up the trunk, and like a 10-year-old girl puts her knapsack, luggage, whatever you want to call it, into the trunk. And with her is either a sister or another person in the carpool, an 8-year-old, looks like an 8-year-old young lady. And as she's about to lift up this piece of knapsack, this older girl immediately takes it from her hand and says, "No, I'll put it in for you." And I said to myself, what great chinuch, what great training that this 10-year-old had. That her immediate response isn't just to get into the car, but to help someone else out. This is what we have to encourage within our children, this amount of sensitivity. Just to give one more example before we move on. Very impressed recently when someone mentioned to me a project that their daughter took on in honor of their bat mitzvah. This young lady's 12-year-old girl decided to take Chaim Walder's book, Kids Speak, which deal with children overcoming adversity in different voices. And this young lady is reading these stories onto a tape with these different voices and is going to, through High Lifeline, which deals with children going through different medical therapies, going to proliferate these tapes so that children who are sick in bed, who can't read, really can't focus, can be able to enjoy these stories and allow these stories of people, young children overcoming adversity, to be an inspiration to these people as part of High Lifeline who are going through themselves difficult medical techniques. This is what we need to train our children. That at the bat mitzvah, it's not only a party. You want to have a party, go gesundheit. But what are you going to do in terms of Klal Yisrael? How are you going to say, how are you going to train your child that now that you're a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah, what act of chesed are you going to take on for the rest of the Jewish people? This is the chinuch of the daughter of Paro. This is the chinuch of putting Mesivus Nefesh, of investing herself into this child. This is the chinuch that we need to invest in our children. But the only way that we can invest in Mesivus Nefesh, that the children understand how important it is to be sensitive to others, and to act on that sensitivity, is clearly that we need ourselves to be models of this. Where Bas Paro just didn't teach this to Moshe, she lived this for Moshe. This is what Yocheved, this is what Miriam, these were all the role models in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Live this aspect, particularly if you say the Mialdos, live this, the midwives, live this aspect of what does it mean to give ourselves over for others, the sensitivity for others. And when children see the way we treat our sick friends, when children see the way we treat a mashulach that comes into the door, and we invite him in and we say, perhaps you want to wash up, perhaps we can get you a drink of water. When the children see this, then they're living models to be noseh ba'olim chaveiro, and that's how you become great. And on this level, the Medrash Rabbah explains that what was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu noticed that it says that Moshe Rabbeinu turned aside, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu called Moshe, Moshe, Moshe. So the Medrash says, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Ata hinachta askecha, you left your work as the supervisor from Paro's house, v'halachta lirot b'tzaran shal Yisrael, and you concern yourself with the pain of the Jewish people, v'nahakta b'hen min hagachim, and you acted as a brother to them, ani maniach et halyonim v'tachtonim v'adaber imach. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to leave all my world to speak to you. Hadahu dichtiv, and that's what the Torah tells us. Vayar Hashem kisar lerot, and Hashem saw that he turned to see. What did Moshe Rabbeinu turn to see that so touched the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Ra'ah Kadosh Baruch Hu b'Moshe, Kadosh Baruch Hu saw Moshe, shesar me'askav lerot b'sivlotam, that he turned away from his work to focus in on the pain of the Jews. Leficha, therefore, vayikra elav Elokim mitoch asneh. That is why Hashem turned to him in the bush. On the first level, what was it that so touched HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's that Moshe Rabbeinu turned to see. Not turned to see the bush, but on this level turned to see the pity of the people. Turned to see how he could help the people. And this was this great aspect that it was Moshe Rabbeinu who was chosen to be the leader of the people. Just like to add on this first level before moving on to the second, a very important and crucial point. This idea of being nosei ba'olim chaveiro is not just a beautiful concept. It's nice to have empathy and to act on that with others. But the greatness of Nonsei Ba'olim Chaveiro is that it opens up a pathway in heaven where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down and is sensitive and sees and takes concern for us in response. And that's why when Moshe, Rabbi left notes, applied his eyes and ears to his fellow Jews, Hashem responded in kind. As the Torah tells us, verse says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard their moaning, Hashem remembered his covenant with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Hashem saw the children of Israel, Vayeda Elohim, and God knew. And Rashi there comments, and it's the exact same language basically as Moshe Rabbeinu looking at their difficulties. Hashem put his heart to suffer with them and did not turn his eyes from them. What was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu? That by the fact that he felt their pain, saw their anguish, he opened up his heart and eyes to them, the pathway was now open for Hashem at the end of the chapter to respond and open up the pathway for God to say, I hear your cries, I hear the difficulty the Jews are going through, Vayed Elohim, and God knew. And indeed, this idea, we're being Nosei Ba'olim Chaveiro, showing this empathy and sympathy of really attuning ourselves but completely with another, and really bringing ourselves to act. This leading to an opening from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the theme of the end of the Parshat Shmot. Just like to make a number of moments on this because it's so beautiful. And very often we look at the end of the Parshat and we really don't understand what's going on. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to make their lives easier. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending him, the people believe him. And instead of things getting easier, things become harder. Paro says there's going to be no more bricks, you're going to have to make it yourself. We have the Shotrim being hit, the taskmasters who are in charge of the Jews coming up with a quota are being hit, and they're complaining, and they're seeing the difficulty of the people. Let's take a look at the verse, in source 33. The people spread out through the entire land of Egypt to gather gleanings for straw. The taskmasters press, saying, complete your work, the daily matter each day as when there was straw. And the foremen of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had appointed over them, were beaten, saying, why did you not complete the requirement to make bricks as yesterday and the day before? And when they complained to Pharaoh, Pharaoh says, what do you want? You guys want to leave? And at that point, now go to work. Straw will not be given to you, but you must provide the quota of bricks. And then the Torah tells us that the foremen of the children of Israel saw them in distress when they said, do not reduce your bricks and the daily matter each day. At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu complains to God when these foremen are complaining to Moshe, and he says, why did you send me? Things are getting worse. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, now you will see what I shall do to Paro, for through a strong hand will he send them out, and with a strong hand will he drive them from his land. The Matnat Chaim, Solomon explains so beautifully. What's going on at the end of the parasha, based on the writings of El Yalopian and Lev Eliyahu, is that even though Moshe Rabbeinu was sent to redeem the people, and Moshe Rabbeinu had opened up that pathway of having this concern and this empathy, allowing God to have this concern and empathy, still, according to strict justice, the Jewish people should not have been redeemed. They still weren't worthy of redemption. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to create a scenario where not only Moshe Rabbeinu would show this concern and this passion for the people, but one Jew would show this concern and passion for another Jew by not allowing them to have strua. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put these foremen in a very difficult position. Here were Jews who were in charge that the Jewish people should come up with a quota. And if not, they were asked to bring those people who did not meet the quota to the Egyptians to be beaten. And instead, these Jews were beaten. And as we know later on in history, these were the Jews, these 70 people who got the Ruach HaKodesh, who got the divine prophecy later on when Moshe Rabbeinu needed help in leading the people. What was the greatness of this story? It's really found in that one verse, in verse 19. The foremen of the children of Israel saw them in distress. When they felt this distress and they were ready to be beaten instead of the Jews, at that moment when Moshe said, what's going on here, Hashem says, okay, now you'll see. Now's the time for deliverance. because now the Jewish people have shown this concept of no se ba'olim chaveiro. When they feel this passion and this concern for others, and now that they feel this passion and this concern for others, Kadosh Baruch Hu himself can come down and redeem the people. And that's Matnat Chaim says, Shekemo sheyeh adam mitnaheg lamata, the way a person acts below, kach yiskel listoach lo midah al yonah milamala, that's the opening he has from above. Mamash, exactly. Kifi mashi naheg kach mashbia milamala, v'goreim shotah midah ta'ir ba'olam, the way we act below opens up directly the way a Kadosh Baruch Hu treats us from above. To be nosei ba'olim chaveiro, to feel this passion, to feel this compassion, opens up pathways where God will treat us likewise. Hashem Sucha, God is our shadow. That's level number one. Level number one, what was the greatness? How do we become great? It's the model of Moshe Rabbeinu being nosei ba'olim chaveiro, of feeling this empathy and acting on it. And really, part of it comes from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is named by the daughter of Paro. The Mashui, the one who is pulled, will be Moshe, will pull out others. It's what the parents invest in a child, and it's really the child being able to take that model and develop it to become one who has the sensitivity and compassion for others. That's level one. Level two, which we'll just note very briefly, is a second understanding of Moshe Rabbeinu's name and what makes a person great. Rav Munk in Torah Moshe, the translation of the Al-Shech HaKadosh, notes, why is he called Moshe, one who draws others? He says in 37, however, as explained, the location of the princess vis-a-vis the baby would not have enabled her to reach him without a heavenly assist. From where the daughter of Paro was standing to where Moshe Rabbeinu was, there was no way she'd be able to reach this child. We may therefore view the baby as having drawn the daughter of Paro to himself, rather than vice versa. Moshe then had been active in the encounter. In naming the boy, Paro's daughter acknowledged that something supernatural had attracted her. On this level, the name Moshe means that he and everything he represented had the ability to attract the daughter of Paro, that in a sense he was the magnetic pull that allowed her to pull him out. Kimina mayim mishitiyu, when she says, I drew you out of the water, and she's naming the child based on the miracle, and she's really trying to acknowledge, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is acknowledging the miracle of Moshe Rabbeinu's birth, she's acknowledging a very important aspect. That yes, she took the initiative, kimina mayim mishitihu, but he was the one who drew her. He was the one who was Moshe, the magnetic pull that allowed her to be successful. And I think this is the second aspect of life. In the second aspect of life, we need to understand that we need to do this, to take the initiative. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in and allows our efforts to be successful. Moshe Rabbeinu, in that name Moshe, really embodies this concept. That in life, it's about we taking the initiative, and then Moshe, we will be pulled, we will be drawn, and we will be successful. But here comes an important point. There is a very key, elemental step that precedes even the action of going and drawing out and being pulled. And this is the second level of what makes a person great. And it's a very, very simple level, but as we'll see, has tremendous significance. And that is being able to see the basket to even want to pull it out. The ability to be open to the experience that while you are bathing, something is catching your attention, something draws you, you see there's something unique about this. And you're ready to leave that which you're involved in, and you're ready to explore what is it about this basket that's drawing me. That ability to have, in the language of our rabbis, the pitchuli petach kichud el shamacha, to have the opening of an eye's needle, to have the interest of saying, well, let me look what that is, and let me then take some initiative in trying to investigate it, that kimina mayim mishitiyu, that looking and opening and deciding to ask, that's what makes a person great. And this is indeed where Rav Dessler notes, based on the Medrash, of what was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw, that he turned to see, that this is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him. So says Rav Dessler in the name of Simchas Yisrael of Kelm, Shachein HaNechonut Shigila Moshe. What we see here is the readiness that Moshe Rabbeinu shows here, Bisuro Liro, to see why isn't this bush burning. That's what caused him his old greatness. Lefi Shemaseihu Zeh, this action, Nechshav L'asiyat HaTzad HaRishon HaMutalu Al Adam, is the first step incumbent on a person. In life, we need to be open to these experiences, these wonderful spiritual experiences that are right in front of us, that we need to grab onto, we need to investigate. When Hashem saw that he looked at this net, that it caught his attention, that he's now going to look and step aside and see, well, what is going on here? That's what makes a person great. Rabbi Shimon Apfelsdorf, in the book that we mentioned at length on the Hanukkah book, notes, he says, how many times have you driven to work and once you've arrived, realize that you had almost no recollection of the trip? And he says this is called highway hypnosis, which happens to all of us and not just in the car. The mind, it seems, has a mind of its own without even thinking about it. Our thoughts and musings often put us somewhere other than where we are. We may appear to be working, cooking, watering the lawn, driving on the highway, listening to a child. We may be somewhere in the past, reliving, rethinking, reviewing some bygone event, or speculating about the future. The result is we literally don't see, don't experience it right in front of us. However, Judaism considers the ability to see things to be one of the keys to fully experiencing the depth of life and to discovering the spiritual within the mundane. And that's part of the beauty of this story, where we find the Medrash tells us that the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu comes down into the burning bush, from here we learn that there's no place, our rabbis tell us, that is devoid of God's presence, which is in itself a powerful concept, that spirituality, God's presence, is discernible in all things and places. To touch the infinite, the awesome, and the transcendent, we need not trek to the top of a mountain or the shores of the ocean. Even a thorn bush, the very thing that we pass by every day, that we even try to avoid contact with, is a repository for God Himself. But it goes more than that. As we've noted, it was Moshe Rabbeinu's decision, conscious decision, to turn aside in order to be able to see the burning bush. Where was Moshe before he turned aside to see? Was he thinking about the sheep, his father-in-law, where he left in Egypt? Wherever Moshe's mind was, it required a conscious and directed effort for him to turn his mind from those things and focus on the spectacle in front of him. And clearly, had he not turned aside, he never would have seen the bush. After all, it was the turning aside that caught God's attention. And this is really what we learn from the story. In reality, there's nothing mundane in life. That which appears to be quite ordinary, to be lacking depth and meaning, only seems so because we have not yet seen what is truly there. We have not made the conscious decision to turn our attention from the endless stream of thoughts that carry us away from the present in order to perceive the extraordinary that is there in front of us. The story of the burning bush tells us that not only is God's presence in all things, but also that the key to experiencing that presence, to enabling it to call out to our lives, lies in our ability to focus our mind's attention. And that is, Rabbi Apfelsdorf notes at the end of this essay, is really what blessings are all about. That every time we say a blessing on food, on beautiful scenery, on smell, we're drawing our attention to the godliness that's found in the physical. And that, therefore, has to then penetrate that even those things, perhaps, that we don't say a blessing on, they really deserve a blessing in terms of understanding the spiritual content that is found within there. What makes a person special? It's the ability, and we've spoken about this in the past as well, based on Rav Wolbe and Ale Shur, to have his phoninus, the ability to be able to look at the world, to look at oneself, to look at nature, to look at the things that are happening around us and to be inspired by them. To become closer to God because of them. Not to get so caught up in our day in, day in, out lives and not realize and not see the greatness that is found all around us, the spiritual essence of God that's found in the burning bush. And that's the second level. The second level in life that we need to teach our children is to always be alert as we're walking with them down the street. If you notice a beautiful bird, you notice a beautiful flower, say, look at the beautiful thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. I remember a mother told me a number of months ago that she was walking with her little child, and she always used to say this to the child, look at what something beautiful Hashem created. And then they came to an exquisite garden, and this little child, 4 or 5 years old, turned to the mother and said, God must have been working in overtime for this particular garden. That's what we have to really inculcate within our children. The ability to see, the ability to be open to people and to events around us. And this, I think, in conclusion, is what the message of the parasha is. No one was ever as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Rambam tells us that every individual has the ability to become like a Moshe Rabbeinu. To become, which means the best person we can be. I think the Torah in this parasha is giving us the guidelines for greatness. On the one hand, it's noseh ba'olim chaveiro, to be sensitive to other people and act on that sensitivity. That's the first thing when he turned aside to see the difficulties of his brothers, that's what caught God's attention. And the second aspect is to be able to turn aside in life and not to walk around life with highway hypnosis at all times, and to see the beautiful things that life has to offer. And this is something that we as individuals need to sensitize ourselves to. And we need to work on this in terms of our children as well, to be sensitive to people, to act on that sensitivity, and to be sensitive to the events and the nature around us, and to be able to see the godly spark that surrounds us at all times. And in doing so, we're really opening a pathway to be able to bring God down and to have that special shmira, the special watching of God,